All right. It is October 7th, Sabbath Eve, or Friday night. We are on page 140 of the Spirit of Prophecy, Volume 1, or Great Controversy Between Christ and Satan. And we're on the middle of the page where it says the following. It says, Jacob's sons came with the crowd of buyers to purchase corn of Joseph. Now, there's a little back history here. So what we were reading up to is, you know, the drought had begun. Joseph had already defined the dream of Pharaoh. The 7 years were upon them of famine. They already had their plenty. So they got plenty of grain, and so now Jacob's sons came with the crowd of buyers to purchase corn of Joseph, because there was a drought in everywhere, even outside of Egypt. And they bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Now, you remember the dream Joseph had when he was a young man, and they got all up in his face about it? It's being fulfilled as we're reading right now. Well, actually, you know, back then, 5,000 years ago. But the thing is, it was amazing that even as a young child, the Lord was telling him certain things, and that upset them. You know, and then later on, of course, they are fulfilled. That's one of the neat things about the prophetic dreams as well. Sometimes it doesn't fulfill right away. It doesn't have to. It's just like with any prophecy, in fact. Like, look at all the prophecies we're looking forward to in the future. There's not a lot left, obviously, just a few, a small handful. But we still have to rely on the promise of John 14:29, that we're not really going to understand a lot of this stuff until the prophecy is fulfilled. Then we can see it clearer that way. Well, I would hope and think that maybe his brothers kind of like, after they found out this was Joseph later on, of course, they started to realize that, hey, we did bow down in front of him. Just like he said he saw in that dream. So anyway, it says, and Joseph knew his brethren, but he appeared not to know them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed of them, and said unto them, ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land you are come. They assured Joseph that their only errand into Egypt was to buy food. Joseph again charges them with being spies. He wished to learn if they possessed the same haughty spirit they had when he was with them, and he was anxious to draw from them some information regarding his father and Benjamin. They feel humbled in their adversity and manifested grief rather than anger at the suspicions of Joseph. So he's getting some good fruit here right off, obviously. But as we know, it's not over. So they assure him, it says, they assure him that they are no spies, but the sons of one man, and that that they are 12 brethren, and the youngest is now with their father, and one is not. His father and Benjamin are the very ones Joseph wishes to learn in regard to. He professes to doubt the truthfulness of their story, and tells them that he will prove them, and that they shall not go forth from Egypt until their youngest brother come hither. He proposes to keep them in confidence. He proposes to keep them in confinement until one shall go and bring their brother to prove their words, whether there was any truth in them. If they would not consent to do this, he would regard them as spies. The sons of Jacob felt unwilling to consent to this arrangement. It would require some time for one to go to their father to get Benjamin, and their families would suffer for food. And then again, who among them would undertake the journey alone, leaving their brethren in a prison? How could that one meet his father? They saw his distress at the supposed death of Joseph, and he would feel that he was deprived of all his sons. As they conversed with one another in this manner, Joseph heard them. They said, and keep in mind, Joseph, he's bilingual now. He can understand their language too. And so he's listening to everything they're saying, which I think is just an amazing thing. He had all sorts of opportunities to test them. And so he goes, they said further, it may be we shall lose our lives or be made slaves. And if one go back, we just moved here. Okay, there it is. And if one go back to our father for Benjamin and bring him here, he may be made a slave also, and our father would surely die. They decided all remain and suffer together, rather than to bring greater sorrow upon their father by the loss of his much-loved Benjamin. The 3 days of confinement were days of bitter sorrow for Jacob's sons. They reflected upon their past wrong course, especially their cruelty to Joseph. They knew if they were convicted of being spies and they could not bring evidence to clear themselves, they would all have to die or become slaves. They doubted whether any effort any of them might make would cause their father to consent to have Benjamin go from him. After the cruel death, as he thought, Joseph had suffered, they sold Joseph as a slave, and they were fearful that God designed to punish them by suffering them to become slaves. Joseph considers that his father and the families of his brethren may be suffering for food, and he is convinced that his brethren have repented of their cruel treatment of him, and that they would in no case treat Benjamin as they had treated him. So Joseph makes another proposition to his brethren, and he said unto them the third day, "This do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die." They agree to accept his proposition of Joseph's, but express to one another a little hope that their father will let Benjamin return with them. They accuse themselves and one another in regard to their treatment of Joseph, and they said one to another, "We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." And Reuben answered them, saying, "Spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child? And you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. And he turned himself about from them and wept, and returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes. Joseph selected Simeon to be bound because he was the instigator and the principal actor in the cruelty of his brethren toward him. He then directed that his brethren should be liberally supplied with provision, and that every man's money should be placed in his sack. They pursued their homeward journey in sadness. As one of them opened his sack to feed his beast with provender, he found his money, just as he had brought it to Joseph. He told his brethren, and they considered that a new evil would arise, and they were afraid, and said one to another, "What is this that God hath done unto us? Shall we consider this as a token of good from the Lord, or has he suffered to occur to punish us for our sins and plunge us still deeper in affliction?" Now think about this. They know, like, because they're thinking at this time, they're in a heap of trouble. And what do you, because the thought that runs through my mind is, yeah, let's just forget about Simeon. He's a dead man. You know, just walk away from it. But these are different. The times, the mindset of the people back then, they actually feared, well, the Jews anyway, they feared God and they had respect to some extent. I mean, they sinned like anybody else. It's obvious what they did with Joseph, but the fact of the matter is, it was a sticky wicket. They, you know, if they stay away, then Simeon dies in prison, so they think. And if they go, you know, the father's not going to, they're going to have a hard, well, first of all, they're going to have a hard time, obviously, as we know, to bring Benjamin back. But at the same time, how do you explain the money being in the sacks? So, and we all know what happened, but this is all running through their minds, obviously. And so they acknowledge that God has seen their sins and has marked their wrongs, and that he is now visiting them for their transgressions. Now, when they came to their father Jacob, they related to him all that had transpired and said, "The man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. And we said unto him, we are true men. We are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father. One is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan." They told their father that he would not believe their word and said, "If ye are not spies, leave one of your brethren with me and take food for your households. And when you come again, bring your youngest brother, and then I will release you, your brother that is, will release you, your brother that is bound, and you shall be at liberty to trade in land. And as they emptied their sacks, every man's money was found in the sack, and they were all afraid. And Jacob was distressed and said unto them, me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and you will take Benjamin away? All these things are against me. Reuben assured his father that if he would entrust Benjamin to his care, he would surely bring him again to his father. If not, he might slay his two sons. Now, that's a bit rough. I mean, you think about it. Jacob's not going to allow that. But it was a bold statement. It's trying his best just to get his dad to bow to it, obviously. But I should have just read on. It says, this rash speech did not relieve the mind of Jacob. You know, because he's not going to kill the kids, you know. He said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in the which you go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Jacob's affections cling to Benjamin with all the strength of a mother's love. He shows how deeply he has felt the loss of Joseph, but want presses upon Jacob and his children, and their households are calling for food. Jacob requests his sons to go again into Egypt and buy food. Judah says to his father that he cannot go down unless Benjamin is with him. For the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. Judah assures his father that he will be surety for his brother, that if he would send him with them, they would go. And if he did not bring Benjamin back, he would bear the blame of it forever. He tells his father that while they had been lingering because of his unwillingness to send Benjamin, they could have journeyed to Egypt and returned again. So, wow, that conversation went on for a while, obviously well over a month. And so it says, Jacob feels compelled to permit his son Benjamin to go with his brethren. He also sent a present to the ruler, hoping therewith to obtain his favor. He also directed his sons to take double money and return the money found in their sacks, for it might have been placed there by mistake. He says to them, take also your brethren and arise, go again unto the man. And as his sons were about to leave him to go on their doubtful journey, their aged father arose and, while standing in their midst, raised his hands to heaven, entreated the Lord to go with them, and pronounced upon them a gracious benediction. Now, this is what gets me about Christianity today. Now, I know within the SDR movement, we like to pray for each other, especially when it comes to travel mercies, because you never know what craziness is going on in this world. But you don't see that a lot anymore. Well, then you also don't see a lot of prayers being answered either in a lot of all the apostate churches. Now, there are some people of God in these apostate churches. They just don't know the truth as of yet, but they will in the coming days, especially during the loud cry when the latter rain is upon us. But the fact of the matter is, there's the main reason they don't see what we see is mostly because of disobedience, as I shared earlier. But you look back, and you go all the way back to March 7th, 321 AD, when Constantine was schmoozed by the Bishop of Rome to start the first Sunday laws. Yeah, that's when prayer life kind of got crippled, because all sorts of Christians were bowing to it out of fear. It's just like what the SDA said recently when they were asked about, why do you have all these Sunday-keeping churches in the SDA church? They were going to say outright that, well, Sunday laws are coming and we don't want to lose business, so we got a bunch of Sunday-keeping churches open so we can stay in business. No, they're not going to say that. What they did say was that it'll allow us to bring in the Sunday keepers and maybe it'll get them to understand the truth as it should be presented. No, you don't use lies and deception to bring people in. It's just like with these telemarketers that with all these different names on my cell phone. I never answer, but I did years ago. I used to say, you know, I can't buy your product because of deception. They go, what do you mean? I said, you can't lie to me and expect me to trust you in the product you're selling. Well, how did I lie to you? What's your name, sir? Because it certainly isn't the name that was on my cell phone, because they put all these weird names in there and stuff. But that's today's world. It's the age of lying. I've been saying that for decades. And a lot of people think, oh, it's no big thing, you know, a little white lie. It says, oh, well, you know, are you Catholic? Because that sounds, Catholic, if you want to say it that way. How so? Well, you got venial and mortal sin in the Catholic Church. Mortal sin, you know, like murder and stuff like that. Venial, a little white lie. You show me in the scriptures where there's any stages of sin. Sin is sin. Little white lie will get you to burn to ash just as much as murder will. But the Vatican doesn't want to say that because you can get a lot of people doing the venial sins, that they, as they call it, and let them off the hook and say, everything's okay, see you in heaven. They're all going to hell in a handbasket and they don't even know it. But that's what they're being taught. And, but again, that's Isaiah chapter 4, verse 1. They worship the creed. They don't worship the God. You know, they give Christ lip service, as he said. You know, with his own lips, as well as what he said through Isaiah. And so going on, she's quoting from the word. She says, and God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your brother and Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. In other words, absolute, unadulterated trust in God here. He prayed. He prayed for travel mercies. He prayed upon, you know, for his son to come back, and he just trusted the Lord on this. And this is where we got to be, because we're coming to that time now, brothers and sisters, where we're not going to be able to buy and sell anything soon. This includes food and rent, mortgage, gas bill, electric bill, whatever bill. You're not going to be able to. You're going to have to trust the Lord. He says, well, where are we going to get the food? Well, look at Isaiah. Your bread and water shall be sure. Don't worry about it. He'll get you what you need. If you don't believe that, just do a little bit of research in regards to what happened during those 40 years. I did a sermon on this, and I actually changed it into a video. My son Luke made the video because it was long. I didn't like doing the long videos. And it was about the quartermaster general of the army, talking about what it would take just to bring water and firewood to that many people. They're guesstimating 3 million people of the Jews that left Egypt. He was showing how much, and miles of trains filled with water and miles of trains filled with firewood just for drinking water and for heating, you know, the food and stuff, you know, like if they wanted to cook cakes. And the fact that the Lord was letting manna. And think about this. This is all happening in a desert. Ain't a lot of firewood in a desert. And there certainly isn't buckets of water in the desert either. But as we know, by his hand, he did all these things. Well, if he did it in the past, and this is the Lord thy God, I change not, as he says in the word, right? Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Yeah, and so he's going to do it for us in the future. So as we're out there on the run, let's say, when the death decree is put forth, are we going to be concerned with 3 squares a day? No, you might not even go. You might go a day or two without food. We're Christians. We fasted before. We know what it takes. It's not going to kill us to go without food for a couple, 3 days. No big deal. And if he has to, he'll lead us on to, like, say, we're running through the woods. All of a sudden, boom, there's a big old apple tree. And or some of us already have knowledge in regards to somebody, oh, that's just a weed. No, that's a plantain. You can eat it. And there's all sorts of things growing. See, like, I remember this as a teenager when Chemlawns came out. It was called Chemlawn. And they would spray everybody's lawns with Chemlawn, and you couldn't see a dandelion for miles. But a dandelion is your multivitamin. Just pluck that little yellow head off, and you got your vitamins for the day. And if you want to eat the leaves, you can, but you might want to boil them first. The little leaves are great. The big ones with all that white stuff, you know, that white juice, it's kind of bitter, so you got to boil those. And you can eat the root, but you got to boil that at least 3 times. And it is edible. It's like a potato. And so anyway, going on. We will have what we will have. In other words, trust him like Jacob here is trusting the Lord to bring back Benjamin to him. And so going on, it says from the word, and the men took that present, you know, that Jacob gave them for Joseph, even though they don't know it's Joseph. And the men took that present, and they took double money in their hand. And Benjamin rose up and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he could scarcely restrain his brotherly feelings of love. He gave direction to make preparation for his brethren to dine with him. Now, when they were taken into Joseph's house, they were afraid that it was for the purpose of calling them to account because of the money found in their sacks. And they thought that it might have been intentionally placed there for the purpose of finding occasion against them to make them slaves, and that they were brought into the ruler's house to better accomplish this object. And so I guess the politics were no different back then as it is today. Because they're, you know, and a lot of us too, we have to understand this. Some of us are going to end behind bars or even at the business end of a guillotine because someone is lying about us who has power. And so be it. Look at the trial they did on Christ. That was the overwhelmingly illegal trial. what they did with Christ. They couldn't, that wasn't normal at all for what went down. As a matter of fact, we were reading about Pilate the other night and what went down there with the Jews there and all that stuff. It was totally illegal what they did, you know, lying, and then the false witnesses that come forward. Yeah, we're all going to have to go through that. So some of us may end up behind bars. Some of us may be martyred, and some of us just might be on the run, you know, living in a cave or out in the woods or something. And if you know people, as we do, because we have people in every nation now, praise his name, talk to some of the Chinese Christians and ask them what it's like to be a Christian in that country. Or ask some of the Christians in Nigeria what it's like to be a Christian in a Muslim nation. Yeah, it's going to be like that global soon. So going on, they sought to make friends with the steward of the house and made known to him that they had found their money in the mouths of their sacks, fearing that the ruler who had treated them so roughly would accuse them of a wrong, in regard to the matter. They informed the steward that they had brought back the money found in their sacks in full weight, also other money to buy food, and added, "We cannot tell who put our money in our sacks." And he said, "Peace be unto you, fear not, your God and the God of your father hath given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." So he's lying, but then again, he's Egyptian. So, you know, the base definition, and this is one of the reasons you see in the scripture where it talks about Christ being crucified in Egypt. A lot of people don't understand, oh, he wasn't crucified in Egypt. Well, Egyptians are the base definition. It's a prophetic statement in the Old Testament about where Messiah will die. And so Egypt, you know, the Egyptians or just Egypt itself is the basic definition in prophecy for atheism. I mean, and for those that are a little confused about that, just research what Pharaoh said to Moses. Who is God that I should know him or obey him? That's an atheist statement. So anyway, he says, "I had your money," and he brought Simeon out onto him or onto them. The words of the steward relieved their anxiety, and they thought God was indeed gracious unto them, as their father had entreated he would be. When Joseph came home, his brethren gave him the present in the name of their father, and they bowed themselves to him to the earth, and he asked them of their welfare. This is the scriptures now. And he asked them of their welfare and said, "Is your father well, and the old man of whom you spake? Is he yet alive?" And they answered, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health. He is yet alive." And they bowed down their heads and made obeisance. Again, the dream fulfilled. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spake unto me?" And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother. And he sought where to weep. And he entered into his chamber and wept there. And he washed his face and went out and refrained himself and said, "Set on bread." Now, one of the reasons now, you know, I'm just going back in historic record in regards to this. So why would he wash his face? Anybody know? What were the Egyptians known for to have on their face, men and women alike? Makeup. And so you start crying with all that black stuff around your eyes. Yeah, it looks pretty bad. Remember the old days in the 70s when some of the girls would wear that dark makeup and they would cry, and it was just like black rivers running down their cheeks. Now they have it to where it's designed to where it doesn't. It's waterproof or something like that. But boy, we were doing some research years ago in regards to, and this is why some of the people died young back then too, and up into the 50s or 60s when they discovered this. But what was it, lead or mercury or something like that, that allowed for the makeup to be richly black and shimmery? I think it was lead. And they were literally poisoning themselves. The women were poisoning themselves with the lead, you know, the eyeliner and all that stuff. Very close. I mean, eyeliner is very, very close to a liquid region, if you will. So it's got an easy access into the system. You know, hence the reason when you're sick, you know, it's best to chew up the tablet and, like, if you're healthy stuff, not AMA stuff, but you know, the natural stuff. Put it on your tongue first. Give your body time to figure out what you're about to put into your gullet, and all the enzymes are going to start building up before you swallow. And so anyway, going on, it says, Joseph did not eat at the same table with his brethren, for the Egyptians considered it an abomination for them to eat bread with the Hebrews. Joseph placed his brethren at the table, as was customary when their ages were known, commencing with the eldest according to his birthright, arranging them in order down to the youngest as though he perfectly knew their ages. Because he did. His brethren were astonished at this act of Joseph, who they thought could have no knowledge of their ages. As he sent a portion of food to each of his brethren, he sent Benjamin 5 times as much as the others. He did this not only to show his particular regard for his brother Benjamin, but to prove them and see if they regarded Benjamin with the same envious feelings that they had him. Remember, with the coat of many colors? If Benjamin's getting special treatment like Joseph did, would they want to throw him in a pit too or sell him? So he was testing them again. So they thought that Joseph did not understand their language and were free to converse with one another in his presence. Therefore, Joseph had a good opportunity to learn the true state of their feelings without their knowledge. Joseph again commanded to provide his brethren with food as much as they could carry, and put every man's money in his sack's mouth, and to place a silver cup in the sack of the youngest. When his brethren were gone out of the city, Joseph sent his steward to overtake them and inquire why they had rewarded evil for good by taking the silver cup belonging to the king, whereby indeed he divineth. You know, he discerned. Kings and rulers had a cup from which they drank, which was considered a sure detective if any poisonous substance was placed in their drink. And they said unto him, wherefore said my lord these words? God forbid that thy servants should do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sacks, mouths, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan, out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy lord's house silver and gold? With whomsoever of thy servants it be found, both let him die, and we will also be my lord's bondmen. You know, little hasty statement there, knee-jerk reaction. But then again, you know, they were all, you know, pretty sinful to start off with anyway. They had a lot of guilt. And so, and he said, now also let it be according unto your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. And so, of course, it's working out for the better for them, but not for, well, so as far as they concern, you know, for Benjamin. And so then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground and opened every man his sack, and he searched and began at the eldest and left at the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this discovery, all were greatly surprised, and to express their great distress, they rent their garments, which was the custom when in great affliction. Benjamin was more amazed and confounded than his brethren. They returned into the city sorrowful and afraid. They thought that the hand of God was against them for their past wickedness. By their own promise, Benjamin was appointed to a life of slavery, and the fears of their father they thought would be fully realized. Mischief had befallen his much loved Benjamin. Judah had pledged himself to be surety for Benjamin. And so now she relates the scripture that speaks on this, and it says, and Judah and his brethren came into Joseph's house, for he was yet there. And they fell before him on the ground, again fulfilling the dream. And Joseph said unto them, what deed is this that ye have done? Oh, and by the way, they shouldn't have bowed down to him like that. Regardless of Joseph wouldn't do it. You can only bow to God. So they're already kind of wishy-washy in their faith to begin with. So going on, it says, what, and by the way, for those of you that remember, especially those of you that are, you know, have recently left apostate churches, you know what I'm talking about in this regard, because just about everybody that I've talked to over the years that have left, like the SDA church or any other church, they always approach their pastors and to try to help the church to see. And then the pastor can't answer the questions because he doesn't have the eye to see what they're saying. And they leave. Now I'm going to get back to that, as a matter of fact, because I'm going to see what's going on a little bit further here. Well, we already know what's going to be going on, but let me get back to that. She says, and Joseph said unto him, what deed is that ye have done? What, not such a man I can certainly, well, wait, let me backtrack. And Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, for he is yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said unto them, what deed is that, or is this that ye have done? Wot ye not that such a man as I can certainly divine? And Joseph asked this question to draw forth from his brethren an acknowledgement of their past wrong course, that their true feelings might be more fully revealed. So, yeah, glad I waited. And so it says, he did not claim any power of divination, but was willing his brethren should believe that he could read the secret acts of their lives. And Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or what shall we how shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also with whom the cup is found. Judah told his brethren that God had found out their iniquity for selling their brother in Egypt, and was now returning upon them their transgressions for permitting them to become slaves also. And it's fitting that he would think that. And then it goes on to say that Joseph refused to accept them all, according to the word of Judah, as bondmen. And he said, God forbid that I should do so. But the man in whose hand the cup is found, he shall be my servant. And as for you, get you up in peace unto your father. Judah spoke with Joseph aside from the rest, and he related to him the reluctance of his father to let Benjamin come with them to Egypt, and that he pledged himself to become surety for Benjamin, that if he brought him not to his father, he would bear the blame forever. He eloquently pled in behalf of his father, relating his great grief at the loss of Joseph, and that Benjamin was all that was left of the mother which his father loved, and that if Benjamin should be separated from his father, he would die, for his life was bound up in the lad's life. Judah then nobly offered to become a slave instead of his brother, for he could not meet his father without Benjamin was with him. Said Judah, now therefore I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad a bondman to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. Joseph was satisfied. He had proved his brethren, and had seen in them the fruits of true repentance for their sins. And he was so deeply affected that he could no longer conceal his feelings, and requested to be left alone with his brethren. He then gave vent to his long suppressed feelings and wept aloud. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. His brethren could not answer him for astonishment. They could not really believe that the ruler of Egypt was their brother, Joseph, whom they had envied and would have murdered, but finally were satisfied to sell as a slave. All their ill treatment of their brother painfully passed before them, and especially his dreams, which they had despised, and had labored to prevent their fulfillment. They had acted their part in fulfilling these dreams. Repeatedly had they made obeisance to Joseph, you know, the bow down to him thing, because that's what the dream said was going to happen. And so they had acted their part in fulfilling these dreams. They repeatedly had made obeisance to Joseph according to his dream. And now they stood before him condemned and amazed. As Joseph saw the confusion of his brethren, he said to them, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. He nobly sought to make this occasion as easy for his brethren as possible. He had no desire to increase their embarrassment by censuring them. He felt that they had suffered enough for their cruelty to him, and he endeavored to comfort them. He said, this is a good evangelistic method, too, to get them to realize that God is a merciful God, too, because they were still kind of wishy-washy, you know, just by some of the things that they were saying and doing all along anyway. But now they might even have a better relationship with God after this. She goes on to say that he said to them, now therefore, this is scripture again, now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that had sent. See, this is a Christ-like spirit. He could have very easily gone all over them with all sorts of issues and could have blamed them. But we know who directs our paths, right? All of us do. And we know in the days ahead when we're going to have to deal with stuff like this, where we might end up behind bars or whatever, our God is perfectly okay with whatever he would have us do. Because think about it, some of us have to go into the courtrooms because some of these magistrates or court clerks or even people that are like hanging out in courtrooms because they like listening to all that bad stuff, right? They need to hear the final and the present truth. And we're the only ones who are going to be having it. And anybody else that believes as we do, that go forth with the latter rain upon them. And so, yeah, this is, so he went through all these crazy trials. You know, Joseph went through all these crazy trials to be uplifted in such a way that he was actually helping, you know, his family, you know, Israel. So going on, it says, so now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye and go up to my father. Yeah, wait, hold on. It's okay. There it goes. Haste ye and go up to my father and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Now that's got to have to be a rough conversation if you think about it, because they now have to admit to their father Jacob that, yeah, Joseph wasn't dead. They lied to him all those years. They sold him into slavery because they hated him so much. So going on, it says, come down unto me, tarry not, and thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children's children, and thy flocks and thy herds, and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. And behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. In other words, same language. And you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen. And ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. They humbly confessed their wrongs which they had committed against Joseph, and entreated his forgiveness, and were greatly rejoiced to find that he was alive. For they had suffered remorse and great distress of mind since their cruelty toward him. And now, as they knew that they were not guilty of his blood, because he didn't die, their troubled minds were relieved. Joseph gladly forgave his brethren, and sent them away abundantly provided with provisions and carriages and everything necessary for the removal of their father's family and their own to Egypt. Joseph gave his brother Benjamin more valuable presents than his other brethren. And as he sent them away, he charged them, see that ye fall not out of the way. In other words, go straight home, guys. Don't be taking any detours. So see that you fall not out of the way. He was afraid that they might enter into dispute and charge upon one another the cause of their guilt in regard to their cruel treatment of himself. Okay, well, yeah, he was concerned for their mindset too. So with joy, they returned to their father and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, and the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. Let me see how much further we got to go here. I don't think it's much further. Oh, wow. I guess it's going to be a while, because I'm looking at the clock up there. Let me see, where is it? Why don't we stop here? So next week we'll pick it up here where it says Jacob's sons then made their humiliating confessions to their father. Yeah, that had been a rough day, I'm sure, for those guys. And an amazing day for the father.